And Saban finally just had enough. He said, bill me. I'll pay for it. But yeah. But knowing in the back that he was never going to pay for it, and also knowing that if it ever came up in this idea of Saban's job or the AD's job, it was like, man, I invested in our program. I gave my own money for a tarp that your AD wouldn't even pay for. So, yeah, that's crazy how we've had all those. I wonder,
well, you'll remember when Rick took the Miami job, the first million toward their indoor practice facility came from him.
Yeah.
And it's because, in part, he was so frustrated that Georgia didn't have one. Donnan told me yesterday that in the 90s, he had two deals set in fundraising to begin the process of having an indoor facility. So he was a bit of, he could see where college football was going and what was needed at the time. But he said that after some fundraising, Vince Dooley, $2 million of a project he wanted to send to the Botanical Gardens because he was such a gardener and wanted to do that. You know, a bit of a Renaissance man, Vince Dooley. And so Donnan joked, he said, I told Kirby for years we were going to have an indoor practice facility. I just didn't know it was going to be when he was a head coach.
Crazy, huh? Isn't that crazy? A couple let me talk about this Georgia team. I said on yesterday's show, I got to come up with a new rating. I hadn't done it yet, and I don't know how to quantify it yet. But I did this deal where we wanted at all the ACC and SEC schools, and there's only six SEC schools that returned their head coach, their offensive coordinator, and their defensive coordinator. And there's only two, and Georgia's one of the six. There's only two schools in the conference that return their head coach, their offensive coordinator, defensive coordinator, and their starting quarterback. And I'm thinking about these four very important positions. Oklahoma's the only other one who does that. But Georgia has that. And then I started thinking about, and this is live on the air doing it, but Georgia and the stability factor is what I'm trying to say, the stability rating, where you could see the wide receiver from Georgia Tech, maybe –
Isaiah Canyon.
Yeah, he might start some. You could see Khalil Barnes maybe start some. You could see
I think both of those guys are starters. Yeah.
Ridley maybe – Riddle should say, the East Carolina kid maybe. Is he in trouble? Is he got arrested or something. Is he back?
It was a driving thing, as is custom, but yeah. I think that's already been handled. I know some charges were dropped.
Right.
And I hate to say it this way, it wasn't of the most severe variety that we've seen among Georgia, right. But the fact that scale even exists.
But my point is, I don't know if maybe I'm trying to think anybody else that might from the portal starting. The point there is, if you take the 22 starters on offense and defense and you add the two coordinators and head coaches, 25 spots out there, that Georgia really 22 of the 25, and a quarterback counts twice, I guess, in that. So 24. Yeah. 21 of the 24 were in the program last year. And that's a rarity. So I called it at that point in time, Georgia's the most stable football program in the country this year. The most stable most stable team this year.
And you know, when you look at LSU, even Ole Miss, when you're looking at trying to gel 40 guys together, Georgia has opted to do this through retention. And so when you mention those portal guys, you can only come up with two that'll start and maybe a few more that will contribute. You know, Dante Dowdle, the Kentucky running back, was going to be someone that played. I don't think he was going to be in the top even three in reps at Georgia, but he was an ATV accident, pretty severe, so he's not going to be playing football this year, and football should be the last thing on his brain, because as far as I know, I think he's still in the hospital in Atlanta trying to recover from that. So that's a tough deal for him and his family. Overall, you think of the guys that Georgia kept that they had options to go elsewhere, and I think about Ernest Green at left tackle, because when you get as many reps as he's had in college football, sometimes you just begin to look at it and say, look, if I could be a fifth-round pick, I probably need to take that now, because if there's one more injury, am I going to really get a shot in the NFL? And Ernest Green's probably getting close to that point. Keeping Drew Bobo around, you know, that sounds wild, because when he was a recruit, we didn't think anything of it, but that guy's going to be a center in the NFL and be a good one. You know, I don't think he's going to be one of the superstars, Hall of Famer, but he's going to be a good player in the NFL. So you start looking at lines of scrimmage and you say, yeah, that's where Georgia retained a lot of things, and then they kept adding. The question, though, I guess, Mickey, is, cool, that's great that you retain a lot of these players, but when you look at wide receiver, someone told me this week that Isaiah Canyon is probably Georgia's top receiver right now. And to me, I'm like, oh, man, that's not the greatest thing. Because if he is, that means that Maroon probably wasn't in very good shape before he got there, because I think he's fine. I think he's a good player. But, I, you know, he wasn't Jeremiah Smith at Georgia Tech.
What's happened at wide receiver recruiting now? Because Georgia recruits well at every position, but wide receiver, every year they have to go out and get transfers at wide receiver, and every year they – I mean, and they perform well enough, I think. But it does say that if – you know, you don't have to do it on the offensive line. You don't have to do it on the defensive line. You're not having to go out and get these positions, but at wide receiver it seems to be a yearly deal.
Let me pose this question, because we've got a decade of evidence of Kirby Smart now. Top handful, two or three receivers that you can think of in Kirby's era?
Oh, man, now. As far as talent goes or production goes?
I think the top two are pretty undisputed, and I'm not even putting Brock Bowers in here. He would be, you know, number one for sure. But to me, Ladd McConkey and George Pickens are the two.
Mm-hmm. Well, totally different guys here, huh?
Right. Yeah. But it drops off pretty steep after that, I think. There's other good – you can argue Zachariah Branch last season would be the third one that you would put in there. But that was a transfer one-year sample size. Yeah. But he was that meaningful to Georgia's offense last year. I guess my thing is, do you see anyone on Georgia at wide receiver that you're like, they can have the impact that even Zachariah Branch had last year? Because I don't. I think it's a committee situation. I think Talon Taylor has talent. I think Isaiah Kanyon's a good player, but I think Isaiah Kanyon, I mean, this sounds bad, but I think he's going to end up being a forgettable player, you know, when you look at the next decade of Georgia football. He's not going to be a Ladd McConkey that you think of a few years later.
And that leads me to my other thing I want to talk about in the last 5 minutes. We'll get this more in the future, but Georgia, the media days comes out ahead of Texas. I can make a case that Texas, especially at wide receiver, maybe at quarterback. I mean, there's areas where Texas is better than Georgia. Maybe at linebacker, maybe in the secondary, maybe at quarterback, maybe at wide receiver. Not even maybe, better at wide receiver. But that said, you go back and look, and we just did this last week, of the Alabama and Georgia mindset. I think the same thing for Texas, or the opposite now for Texas and Georgia, because – Georgia went down to Austin, you know, 2 years ago and stole their lunch money, and then they had a close game in the SEC championship game. And last year physically dominated them in Athens. And as good as Texas is, and you can make an argument, Texas might be the more talented team, but until they beat Georgia, the mentality of this thing, the physical nature of this thing, and how dominant Georgia's been against Texas, I can't pick against Georgia.
You're right. I will remind you, just because I always let tossing this fact out. Yeah, Georgia went to Austin 2 years ago. Texas A&M has been in the SEC for 14 years, and Georgia still's never played in College Station.
That's crazy.
I mean, what are we doing?
That's crazy.
I do think Georgia currently has a line of scrimmage mental edge on Texas, in the sense that if Georgia has a fourth quarter lead, I like Georgia's chances to win that game, because we've seen it multiple times that they've been able to close either by making a Texas quarterback feel uncomfortable or by running the ball and keeping that clock moving and playing possession ball. I don't think that Georgia's going to have big flashy plays to beat a lot of teams. I also don't think they're going to have to do that. I think for the majority of teams that Georgia will play, it's going to be line it up, move it forward, and kind of business-like. You know, Kirby Smart loves it that way, because there's less reward, but there's also less risk when you play like that. So there's going to be some wear and tear to the running backs. You know, if you're looking for an early storyline of how does Georgia navigate something this season that's lost from last year, I do think running backs in the pass catching game, that was exclusively a Cass Jones thing for the last two seasons. And he's not there, and they don't have a version of Cass Jones. So these running backs that really haven't been receiver threats, they're going to be asked to do that this season, which one emerges in that lane, because that's going to be how you seal games at the end. Can you run for 3 and 4 yards at a time? And when you can't, can you get a pass for 2 yards and turn it into six?
Here's my deal. Give it to Frazier and give it to Bowen somehow, some way, and you're going to be okay. Like, I don't care how you get them. Like, just give them the ball, man. And wide receivers aren't great, and I think the tight end room is good. And obviously not what it was with the unicorns of Washington and Bowers. But every time you try to throw it to somebody else, that's one time that Frazier and Bowens aren't toting it. And let them tote it, and let's just wear down teams. That's what I would do. All right, let me ask you this in the final minute.
Yeah.
See if I'm – because I don't get to watch Georgia extensively like you do. But let me just give these guys – and this is a small sample size – but let me talk about, like, flashers. We didn't see a ton of Elijah Griffin last year, but that's a cyborg. All right, so I'm okay.
He's the best
there.
Player in the team.
All right, best player in the football team. All right. Quintavious Johnson, every time I watch him, he just makes plays. Am I right there? Is this a good player as I think he is? The Jack linebacker, the defensive end?
Yeah, and I think he's going to be one of those that, like, he has one good college season, and then you'll be like, man, that guy's been in the NFL for 10 years.
That's right.
I don't remember him in college.
100%. The two that got me last year that weren't big names coming in that I really loved, Chris Cole was pushed into a position, and every time I watch Chris Cole, man, I there was a little drop-off, but not a lot. And I look at this guy like, man, this guy's a superstar. Have I missed this one?
You're right on. And I think Chris Cole is probably more of the team leader aspect of this. Quintavious Johnson is not.
Okay.
Those as a duo, I think, can be. Chris Cole's special. I think he's really good, like, in that next Georgia linebacker situation. Kind of like C.J. Allen.
Yeah.
I know he's outside. You know, like, there's some versatility with there's a chance Chris Cole leads his team in sacks.
All right. Give me this last one. Wasn't a big name, wasn't supposed to be whatever, but when I watched DeMelo Jones last year, I like that upside. I didn't see a ton of it, but am I missing this one, or have I got this one right too?
No, I like it. Teams are trying to pick on him because Ellis Robinson took such a big step forward in the second half of last year.
Yeah.
So there was just a lot of balls thrown his way. When that happens, I don't care who you are, you're going to give up some against really good receivers. DeMelo's a really smart player. He played quarterback in high school at Swainsboro High School down in my neck of the woods where I grew up. I think he's a great athlete. I think he'll be a good player this year. Is he ready to step into a number one corner spot? Probably not, but he doesn't have to because of Ellis Robinson. The following year, I think DeMelo's right there to be top corner in Georgia.
All right, final one. I lied, final one. Elias Williams, man, this is the cyborg. This is the Washington and Bowers. Like, let's find a way. That guy's a beast. How do you stop that?
Well, I asked Jim Donnan this. I was like, man, if I'm Mike Bobo, I'm just throwing to these tight ends because it's Elias, it's Ethan Barbour, it's a Lawson Lucky. There's three others there that are great. They're going to put Caden Prothro, a true freshman, some at wide receiver just because they can't find reps for him at tight end. Like, they're that good. And then Donnan reminded me last year that tight ends at Georgia had about 43 catches. And I said, that number needs to be doubled.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's going to be something to watch as we go into this year because the tight ends can be great in the pass game, but you got to get it to them. And that comes down to Gunnar Stockton and the priorities of the offense.
Good point. UJSports.com. Tell us, so you got a big Jim Donnan thank from yesterday. Let's talk about that and everything on site that folks can enjoy.
Yep, and so this is my last appearance affiliated with UGASports.com, so I hope people still continue to support them. But it's not my last appearance with you because to bring people into our text messages, beginning next week, you're going to have me on talking about my day job, which is the Carmichael Sports Media Institute at the University of Georgia, training sports media people. So I get to be your sports media expert that has an eye on the ground
wait.
In Georgia.
I can't yep. wait. Congratulations.
I'll send you a text how to lead into that.
All right, great. Congratulations, because that's a big deal for you and your family and all that. Well-deserved. Well-deserved for sure.
Thanks, buddy.
Oh, my friend. Tell the family who we said hello.
Will do.
All right. Dane Young, UGASports.com. We'll come back. We'll stay in the state of Georgia because we'll go over to Andrew Oliphant. We've got to review the British Open and talk about the spike stuff from Lucas Glover. We've got a lot to get into, and you can return it to this.
24-7, 365, the action never ends. For around-the-clock sports talk, catch the worldwide leader in sports on ESPN Radio. Right here on The Roar, a proud affiliate of the ESPN family.
Elkmont Trading Company. We say if you haven't been to Elkmont, haven't been to Clemson, these are good people with great products right now. So I want you to go to ElkmontTradingCompany.com and learn more about the Elkmont collection and learn more about their game day stuff, the ladies' boutique apparel, the outerwear, the men's, the incredible stuff, the L.L. Bean stuff, and the outdoor stuff, all the footwear, and man, that's Birkenstock and On Cloud and all the active stuff they've got there. You know, they've got all the great eyewear stuff, the game day apparel they've got. There's something for everyone over at Elkmont Trading Company. So go by and see them. And everywhere now, I didn't know what On Running Shoes were until I walked in the door. Now everywhere I go, I see those. I didn't know what Z Supply was. I didn't know what Free Fly was. I mean, give me that Free Fly stuff. Give me that Viori stuff. My wife loves all that. It's our great friends at Elkmont Trading Company. Check them out. It's ElkmontTradingCompany.com. Highway 93 at 123 in Clemson. Go by and see our friends at Elkmont.
The only thing louder than the upper deck on a Saturday.
Andrew Oliphant, Director of Instruction at Katichi, joins us talking some PGA Tour, some European Tour, some Lady Tour golf. Good morning, Andy O. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Good morning, Jimmy Key.
We were just saying, Ashby was asking, because she's from Alabama and she goes to a bunch of Auburn friends, and she says, tell me about this Koivon kid and this new winner of PGA Tour, the Auburn kid. And I just showed her a picture of his downswing and the torque he puts on his back and his neck. And then I'm like, man, I don't know if this thing's going to last very long, but it's lasting pretty good so far. In his third start on the PGA Tour, he wins. What do you think of this Gosling? What do you think of this future phenom?
Yeah, red hot, isn't he? And I think it's testament to the college programs, to the junior coaching that he's had. You know, I mean, these guys now are coming out so ready. You know, I mean, and that's proven once again. You know, so you mentioned the back there. Can it hold up? We'll have to wait and see. But red hot with the putter too. I mean, you know, looks really comfortable over the golf ball when he's putting, and that's the key. You know, I mean, if you hit every shot to 4 feet for 18 holes and you miss every 4 foot putt, then you're not going to be able to compete. But he seems to be, you know, pouring everything in from all distances, you know, but looks really good with the putter. So the future's bright for that young man.
If you had to pick, and we've not seen enough sample size yet, but knowing about their swings and their back makeup and their personalities and their background, we've got, to me, there's 50, but I don't know 50 of them. The three I know, Miles Russell, Blades Brown, and this Koivon kid, all of them are young. All of them are – some of them are teenagers still. But these are guys that have done it at a very, very high level, Walker Cup-type level. Do you have a better feel for maybe which one of these might be the best, or at this point in time or future-wise, who might be the best?
There's a few others, isn't there? You know,
yeah.
Nick Dunlap came out red hot. You know, Gordon Sargent finished runner-up last week. You know, so you know, who's going to be the best? It's hard to win on the tour. You know, that's something that we've always said. It's tough to win out there, and how many wins, and then they get to majors, and you know, can they be a little bit of luck has got to go their way? Can they be fortunate that all of a sudden they find themselves in the mix at a major and they pull that off? I don't know. I mean, I don't know who's going to be the best of the bunch there. You know, again, time will tell.
Dunlap has won. Sargent hadn't won yet. And Dunlap, you know, he came out, was like blazing and all that, but cooled off a little bit. Sargent is a pretty consistent performance. So yeah, you got to add those two in there too. But really, it does say a lot, and it says a lot about junior golf and you know, American golf, by the way, because you know we don't have phenoms. No, I think we will maybe in the future. We don't have phenoms like this at the FEMA game, do we? That's more of a South Korean. They continue to push punch putt out that way.
Yeah, I mean, in junior golf, it goes in waves. I mean, I think some of the best players I saw, you know, go back 20 years ago, it was certainly in Thailand. Some of the young players that are over there at a really young age are really, really good. You know, they're coming over to junior world championships and finishing either first. You know, there's a bunch of them in the top 10. And then it switched over for a while. You know, Japan were all of a sudden creating some of the best players and still are. You know, that's a little bit more recent that you start to look at junior world events. And there might be two or three players from Japan in that top 10. And, I mean, these kids are shooting, you know, 10, 15 under par for three rounds of golf. You know, it's incredible golf. And why that is, I don't know. I mean, again, we could put it down to coaching. I think that once a bunch of players get together, they sort of drive each other. You know, we had that for a long time at the Golf Academy down in Bradenton. You know, that you get a group of players and they all sort of feed off each other and they all get better together. So, you know, where the next player's coming from, whether it's the men's game, the ladies tend to come out red hot earlier, you know, that they sort of mature a little bit earlier than the junior boys. But we're seeing a trend in these young kids, you know, in the boys, young men now coming out and doing incredibly well on the main tours.
Is there anything you can point to? Because I said this when, and I got in trouble at the time. Everybody disagreed with me on the station. I was like, man, or on the show, I was like, man, Jordan Spieth's not going to win 10 majors. You know, he came out blazing like that, and he got off to a great start. So, and that's great. He's making every putt now. But A, he's not going to hit it far enough to dominate every week, and he's got to be able to make putts every week, and that eventually runs out a little bit. I happen to be right about that. But the other thing I said was because the next wave coming is better. And then as good as Koivun is, as good as Russell is, or as good as Sargent is, as good as Dunlap is, you know, as good as these guys are now, the next wave's going to be better than them. And so you're not going to have 25 years to dominate the way a Nicklaus did or Tiger did, kind of a thing. And so with that said, what is there a priority you could place on, a percentage you could place on? Like, why is it just better and better with every one of these generations?
Phew. That's a lot to unpack there, yeah. Mickey. I mean,
it's a lot of factors in there.
Yeah. That's got me scratching my head all the way to, you know, recently I'm looking online at players' clubs, you know, what's in the bag? Yeah. I think recently it was like Tom Lehman, and I'm looking at his eyes thinking, oh my goodness, they'd be in Goodwill. You know, people are just like, what a bag of junk, you know, and you're like, I used to play those, you know, blades and small headed metal woods, you know, and you know, counter one iron. And the game has changed even from an equipment standpoint. You know, we've mentioned putters, you know, everybody's using a mallet putter, you know, so trends, fashions change. You know, why is the next wave better and better? Is equipment doing that? You know, we're kind of hovering over a ball rollback thing that may or may not happen. So, you know, who knows? I mean, I know from a training standpoint, I'd like to say coaches have got more in their toolbox to be able to train these players, whether it's from a fitness side, whether it's from a, you know, the science, you know, dietitians getting involved. You know, they've all got their teams. You know, I mean, even on the junior golf side, you see some of these junior golfers out there with their mental coach and their putting coach, their chipping coach, their long game coach, and the, you know, so that their teams are improving. But at the end product, it's still going to be done on the golf course. That little white ball's still got to go into the hole in as few strokes as possible. So I'm not sure why the next wave will be better. Maybe we're learning as a generation.
All right, let me give you or get your thoughts on this and see if we can help folks through my experience. Took a lesson last Thursday, and it finally hit home with me. You know, in lessons, there's different ways to communicate a feel or a thought, and there's different ways people learn. And so I got this lesson from my guy, and it finally clicked with me. And one of the things I was doing, especially with the driver, I was spinning out so fast, my path was so far left, like this astronomical left. There's no way you can hit it straight by going that far, you know, out to in and swing path being that far left. So anyway, things we worked on. I'm now seeing the ball start to the right of the target a little bit and work its way back. On the other side, my iron game, you've seen me do this before, my early extent, my butt comes off, and I don't get a whole lot going there. But we're on the iron game, I'm trying to come more, across the line a little more, right and left. I had them reversed out. It's hard changes in seeing it. But my point there is, is that I feel like with the driver, I'm trying to hit it 80 yards right, my swing path, and it's not. It's was 2 degrees or something. You know, it's not that. You fight for an inch to get a yard. I mean, try for a yard to get an inch. On the other side of it, I feel like with the iron game, I'm coming way over the top, and the video says it's not. So my couple of points here. Talk about working your way as a feel of an extreme, and it's not real extreme, but the feel of an extreme in order to get a little bit in there, and the opposite of maybe what you're doing if you're struggling. And then the other part of it is a lot to unpack. I'll say the second part of the question. Let's try to get yards, but we fight for 1 inch out of all that and 1 degree right compared to 8 degrees left.
Yeah. You're using a TrackMan or some kind of launch monitor to be able to get that precise on the numbers. But, if you're going to compete at a top level, those numbers, even for the weekend warrior golfer, you know, you're looking to get those numbers somewhere under that 2 degrees of tolerance, you know what I mean? And it is precise, you know, so the feels, you've got some players even on the tour, Alex Noren jumps to mind, you know, who has a really exaggerated practice swing. Jordan Spieth has got somewhat of an exaggerated practice swing. in order to develop the right feels in their golf swing, exactly what you're experiencing, you know, that you might have to feel that you're swinging, you know, as hard left as you possibly can, you know, not 1 degree, you know, just as, do it more, just to get yourself even close to being in that norm. And the only thing I really like about TrackMan and keeping the data and the numbers is it's a quantifiable number, right? You know, so you keep doing that feel.
Yeah.
Eventually it should happen. But where are you trying to get to? You know what I mean? If you're like, hey, you know, the blueprints to get 1 degree left, well, you keep swinging hard left, eventually it could get to 7, 8, 9, 10 degrees.
Yeah.
You go, well, hang on, you've overdone this, you know. So I like the numbers just to reflect on and go, where were you at the start of the journey, and where are you in the middle, and where are you at the end?
Well, then also, you bring it back. I mean, if I ever start with the driver starting too far right, you know, you kind of bring it back. But that just feels so foreign to me. The second part of it is swing changes, and I'll let you finish up with this question, is in making swing changes, playing, it's so easy to get caught into playing golf swing on the course rather than playing golf. Whereas that, man, that working on the range, that time working, hitting the nets, indoors, outdoors, whatever, man, that's the time to swing, to play golf swing. But on a golf course, man, I got to play golf rather than golf swing. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, I've recently been giving students what I call five, you know, different things. They might have five things in their swing to work on, but only work on one aspect. You know, so if I give you five golf balls and you're like, hey, I've got to swing left. Okay, swing left with these first five. You know, now, you know, I've got the driver out, I want to swing to the right. Okay, focus on swinging to the right with these next five. But, you know, don't try and do five things in one swing.
Right.
You know, just do one thing with five golf balls. You know, so and almost regardless of ball flight, you know, if you hit a good shot, great. You know, if you hit a poor shot, then, you know, get back to focusing on that one thing. Because if you go to the golf course and you add in, you know, hey, you've got a, you know, flag that's tucked and this yardage and a bunker to carry and the wind's off the right and, oh, by the way, there's a big lake to the right of the green. You know, and you're thinking five different things, then it's probably not going to end up too well.
Very good points. If I want to learn more about that, more about Aimpoint, more about getting great lessons at all levels or all, you know, all ages, let's talk about how they can reach you guys.
Yeah, the best way is andrew@katichi.com, and putting some after-school programs and junior programs. I can't believe the summer's almost done for them, right? You know, they're getting back to school. And so we've got some weekend stuff coming up for junior golfers. And as always, with the adult programs are continuing throughout the year.
Good stuff. andrew@katichi.com. Won't hear from you next couple of weeks. You're going across the pond. I want to wish you safe travels. Enjoy the trip, and let's talk when you get back.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks again, Mickey.
All right. Thank you, Andrew Oliphant. The adult. I don't know if you heard that or not, actually, but that's the adult.
Tuesday.
Tuesday. His Bama accent's really thick. Is that Southern Bama? Is that the mountains of Bama? Got some Bama in there. We'll take a break. We'll come back. I have a great tease for you. A guy sent me this morning. Clemson's schedule may be the easiest in conference in the ACC. I'll give you the evidence of that when we come back.
The sports world never stops spinning. We bring order to the athletic calendar. From sunup to sundown, we've got you covered with the most up-to-date sports talk on the airwaves. 105.5, 97.5, The Roar, your upstate sports authority.
Great friends at Best Buy Metals do an incredible job for you. Best Buy Metals is a company that we've got right here in Greenville, Wade Hampton Boulevard. Their products are amazing. And this Best Buy Metal, we talk about technology and golf and TrackMan and force plates and what all we're learning there. We're learning all this about metal roofing as well, to the point where the through-fastened metal stuff, the metal shingle stuff, the lifetime warranty stuff, the low-maintenance stuff, and all the colors and all the different designs, man, that technology has soared. You will love our great friends at Best Buy Metals. Wade Hampton Boulevard, ask your builder about it. If your builder's out there, ask if your clients might be involved in this and learning more about that. If you're building a home or if you're adding a new roof to your existing home, check them out. Learn more about it. Great product, great warranty, and low maintenance. It's bestbuymetalroofing.com.
Forget the national noise. We are real talk for real fans. 105.5 and 97.5. The Roar.
When you're stuck on the side of the road, you don't have time to wait. That's where Skinner Tire comes in. With top tire brands in stock, with fast, reliable service, they'll get you rolling again in no time. And if you can't make it to them, no problem. Their roadside trucks are ready to come to you. Flat tire? Blowout? New set needed? Call the folks Upstate Drivers Trust. Skinner Tire, 864-599-0026 for the best prices today.
Serving the Upstate for over 26 years, Estes Heating and Air is proud.
Over at the Patterson Tax Service, 864-859-8289. All right, the guy sent me this, a listener sent me this morning. And it makes a lot of sense, and I'm going to get into it now. Clemson's schedule. And I can quantify it. I can go back and write it all out and do it all out. But with the ACC Media Day media predictions, and let's assume all those are right and everybody's slotted where they should be. Do you realize that Clemson this year, in its ACC schedule, plays number 1, 5, 8, 10, 11, 12, 14, and 15 out of 17? So only two of the top seven, and oh, by the way, the two top ones you play, 1 and 5, are at home. Now, you have to play better at home. You got to get the death back in Death Valley. Clemson's home, Clemson didn't lose a home game from 2017 to 2021. And they went 7 years and lost two home games. Is that right? 7 years, lost three home games. So we got to get back to that. Rather than the last 2 years, this thing's been 7 and 6 at home. Got to get better at home. But to that point, home games, number 1, Miami, number 5, Georgia Tech, number 8, Virginia Tech, and number 15, North Carolina. On the road, Clemson plays. It's obviously LSU's is tough. It's a road game. But the road teams, number 10, Duke, number 11, Florida State, number 12, Cal, number 14, Syracuse. Of the predicted AC Media Days poll, I always look at schedules and I look at potential trip-ups on the road. Obviously, LSU is one. But I don't know, man. I ain't scared in Wallace Wade Outdoor Stadium. I ain't scared in Doak Campbell, old Erector Set. Ain't scared at Cal with – I'll tell you interesting about Cal, my buddy pointed out.
Scared of the stadium necessarily, but that's a scary game.
I'm going to give you something on Cal in a minute. I'm going to get you feeling better about this thing. And I ain't scared at Syracuse and seeing Clemson lose at Syracuse and all that. But that said, here's another point my buddy made. My buddy Dave checking in doing my research for me today. Everybody talks about Cal and, oh, man, the trip. It's a Friday night. It's way out there. You gotta board a plane. You gotta fly way out there. Oh my God, how are you gonna compete? Can I give you this? That in 2 years, last year they were 4-2 at home, and the four home wins were Texas Southern, Minnesota good win, North Carolina, and SMU. But they lost a home game to Duke, lost a home game to Virginia last year. Lost a home game to Miami, home game to NC State, home game to Syracuse. It's not a pit. Cal in the last 10 years is 35-24 at home. It's not a pit. The other thing you say is, well, Cal, new staff. I don't know about new staff yet. And I love the quarterback. I think he's got a chance to be a good one. But so does C.J. Bailey, and so does Mensa, and so does the Pitt dude, and so does the Jennings quarterback. I don't think he's any better than any of those guys. SMU guy. I don't think he's even better than any of those guys.
No, I just think it's a scary game for all of the above factors.
But don't get caught into it, because here's the real factor here.
All right.
And again, I don't know if Clemson's going to be very good. I don't know. But here's the real factor here. And Dave pointed out, I'm a big Phil Steele guy. Phil Steele puts out four teams of all conference guys. And to be fair, on their fourth team offense, wide receiver Ian Strong, wide receiver Chase Hendricks. The quarterback's not in the top four, by the way. and defensive end Jaden Wayne. But that's it. There's not a third team guy on his all conference team from Cal. There's not a second team guy from his all conference team at Cal, and there's not a first team guy from his all conference team at Cal. That's 66 of the top 66 players in the league. If you break it down that way, I'm sure maybe some other positions might, maybe quarterbacks are higher than the third team safety. But that being said, the first three teams, 66 players, no Cal guys. And the game's played by football players inside of football uniforms, not by, oh, you got to go play in an airplane? You got to go fly out there? I can't believe you got to fly out there. Oh, it's a long way. It's a Friday? I ain't scared, man. Sorry. If I got to get to the point in time where I'm scared of Berkeley, California football, then just check me out. Just check me out. I'll go and get out of it. Now, again, you're talking about a team that got beat by Duke at home and SMU at home and Syracuse at home last year. I'm not trying to say that, but I have to be shocked by that. With the point where I'm going to go into it scared and saying, oh, man, I'm so weary of Cal. Like, oh, no, I ain't doing it. Ain't doing it. Sorry.
All right.
Not doing it.
Get it. You know what's a non-fun fact? Mm-mm. Clemson hadn't won at Duke since 2012.
All right, what's the record at Duke since 2012?
0-2.
Okay. So they played twice since 2012.
Yeah.
So you could say they lost the last two games at Duke.
They lost the last two games at Duke.
Yeah.
But they haven't won there since.
And Duke beat them at home last year.
It's been a minute. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a minute. So that's a trip-up game, too.
Okay.
You don't have Duke's not going to be as good. Don't get me wrong with the Mensa
thing. Is Mensa coming back?
No.
Okay.
But look, think about the games last year. Look at Clemson's schedule. All right.
By the way, Duke has three guys in the top three teams on Phil Steele stuff.
Okay. Look at Clemson's schedule last year, right?
Four of the top on all four teams, by the way. I'm sorry, three of the top. On the top four all ACC teams, they got three guys. In other words, the top 88, they got three. And they don't have Mensa, don't have the wide receivers. Anymore. All right, so again, I'm sorry.
Look at the schedule last year and look at Syracuse. Look at Duke.
Yeah.
Look at SMU.
Yeah. Should be better than them.
Clemson was more talented than every team they played last season, except maybe LSU.
The only time that Clemson was an underdog last year was at Louisville, and they ended up winning. So they weren't underdogs. They were more talented. They thought that Vegas at least thought that they overvalued it, but they thought they'd be better.
Clemson's a more talented team than almost every team they played last year,
yep.
And they're more talented than everybody except LSU and Miami this season.
Right.
However, there's no transitive property.
I agree with all that. Some, but not a direct correlation. I'm with you on all that. But the point is, they're not playing SMU, and they're not playing Louisville. And those are the four. To me, it's Miami's by far the best.
Agree.
And then Louisville, SMU, and Clemson somewhere in there. But even, you know, we're not no Pitt, no Virginia. Like, I don't know, man. This seems to be doable schedule-wise and conference-wise. I mean, South Carolina, LSU, two SEC teams on out of conference deal there. But I'm talking inside the conference as far as making it to Charlotte. At home, you get number 1, 5, 8, and 15. On the road, you get 10, 11, 12, and 14. Like, it's not a tough schedule.
You should be able to win
you
all
should.
Of those games. You should.
Yeah.
There's no excuse not to. But that doesn't mean they will.
I agree. I totally agree with that. Brad, he's my Allstate agent, 292-3001. Brad, he's at Allstate.com, BradHughesInsurance.com. Better coverage, better rates. Thanks to Brad Hughes and the Allstate Insurance Agency. We love Brad Hughes, loves what he does for us. And the fact that we combine our homeowners and auto owners, it worked out great. You can't beat it. Brad Hughes at Allstate.com. Best music of the day? Question.